If you're able to do so, grab your Bible and open it to Exodus chapter number 36, where we're going to start at verse number 20. Now, some of this is very repetitive information, I'm going to tell you that some of it I will summarize, others of it I will read verbatim, but this is the description of how Bezalel and Oholiab led in the manufacturing of the components of the tabernacle. They took all of that donated material. They trained people to join them in turning all of this material into something amazingly beautiful. Now, the way that they know what it should look like is Moses is there telling them, this is what God showed me, and this is what you should be doing. Bezalel and Oholiab are really putting the beauty to all of this vision of Moses. We've already talked about the fabric that is being used for the covering of the tabernacle building itself. Verse number 20 starts talking about the upright frames that form the three sides of this tent. It says he made the upright frames for the tabernacle of acacia wood, so that's the base material. 10 cubits was the length of each frame, and a cubit and a half the breadth of each frame. Now, these are going to be upright. Now, the way that they're stabilized is by having little feet underneath them. Verse 22, each frame had two tenons or feet for fitting together. The tenon, I guess, is the ankle portion that's on the frame that goes down in the foot or the shoe of the base. And that's how it is stabilized, or at least one of the ways that it's stabilized. And these frames, and I think English Standard Version is right on the money with this. When I was first trained and when I was growing up and seeing pictures, it seemed as if these were solid boards that had been covered with gold. And so they were all sticking up and kept together. And so if you were on the inside of the tabernacle, you saw gold walls. I think that the wording lends itself much better to open framework, so that what you actually see is the tapestry layer of the drapes showing through the open framework. And we know that the drapery was intended to be seen. And so it seems like the boards, if they were solid, would be in the way. So this is the upright frames. And when you put them all together, there's 20 on the south, there's 20 on the north, and that makes 30 cubits length on each side. Then there are two bases under each of these upright frames. And then at the rear, verse 27, there's six frames, which is not going to take you a total 10 cubits across, because each frame is only 1.5 cubits. So you end up with two corner pieces that are mentioned in verse 29 that fill out that back wall. And then another device that helps them to be a solid, sturdy, three-sided building is this. Verse number 29, they were separate beneath, but joined at the top at the first ring, and he made two of them this way for the two corners. There were eight frames with their bases for the silver. That's all about the corner pieces. I needed to go verse 31. There we go. He made bars of acacia wood, and all of this is covered in gold. More than likely, they've heated the gold up and they've adhered it onto the wood itself. And so he makes these bars of acacia wood, five for the frames on the one side of the tabernacle, five for the frames on the other side, five for the rear. And the middle bar in each case runs from end to end halfway up the frames. And these bars fit into rings on each side. So effectively, if you can picture it being put together, you have a whole bunch of priests that grab these big upright frames and they put them in the feet, the little bases underneath each of these frames, and they're holding these frames together upright on three sides, and then somebody comes along and slides a locking bar on the outside of the frame through a bunch of rings that are attached to those frames. And once that bar goes through and its other bars go through, then that side becomes rigid. It's not going anywhere. It is a solid wall now. Solid in the sense it's stable. And so that happens on all three sides so that this frame is perfectly stable. And this is going to facilitate putting the tabernacle up very quickly and taking it down very quickly. It is, for all practical purposes, it's a modular tent. I think about my days during Desert Shield and then Desert Storm back at Gulf War I. We were the AeroVac unit about 75 miles south of the Kuwait line. And so we had to set up our own tents for residents and our hospital tents on the first day we arrived. The CBs had already put us up good concrete bases, but we came in and opened up a whole bunch of pallets with our tent material, and we put up, I think, eight residence tents and five hospital tents, including one administrative tent, in a matter of hours. And there were only like 50 or 60 of us. So the reason that went so fast is because everything was modular. Everything could be snapped together and draped over in a very quick fashion. That's exactly what we're seeing here. I am sure that once they arrived on site, Levites and whatever priests might be involved could put these things up in a few hours. Could put the whole tabernacle up in a few hours. All right. Verse number 35. He made the veil of blue and purple and scarlet yarns and fine twined linen with getter beans skillfully worked into it. He made it. Now, this is one of two screens that are placed in the tabernacle building. And first one is at the back. It separates the holy place from the most holy place. The other one's in front that separates the tabernacle building itself from the outside court. And these screens are probably a much finer linen, maybe even translucent, but they are also embroidered with these keruvim, because the keruvim are a reminder from the book of Genesis that a sinful human cannot approach the holy presence of God without permission. Remember, God placed two keruvim there at the border of the Garden of Eden to keep sinful mankind out of that area. And so that's what all these forms represent, are the four-faced, four-winged keruvim, and their responsibility to shield the holiness of God from sinful mankind. Now, these are going to have pillars that they will be leaning against or draped against. Verse 36, he made four pillars of acacia and overlaid them with gold. Their hooks were of gold, and he cast them for them four bases of silver. And then he made a screen for the entrance of the tent, blue and purple and scarlet yarns and fine twined linen, embroidered with needlework, and its five pillars with their hooks. So there's four pillars dividing the holy place from the most holy place, five pillars that divide the courtyard from the holy tabernacle itself. And he overlaid their capitals, these pillars, and their fillets were of gold, and their five bases were of bronze. So there's a little bit of distinction in the material that are used. The closer you get with God, the more precious it is. Chapter 37. Bezalel made the ark of acacia wood. Now remember, the ark is not just a decorated storage box. It is the throne of God in portable form. And it's 2 cubits and a half in its length, and I like the idea of width at that point, 1.5 cubits in its breadth, and then it's 1.5 cubits in its height. Think of a shorter cabinet, a sideboard. But this sideboard is actually intended to be more of a seat. And so it's overlaid in gold inside and out, and it's got gold moldings, it's got rings for its carrying poles. And once the poles are put in to those rings, which are going to be on the short sides of the ark, because this is a sedan chair, it is a portable throne, and that's where the poles would go on such a throne. Once they're put in place, they don't come out again. The other things that are carried with poles, the poles are removed once the item is put in place. But the Ark of the Covenant, the poles project forward into the holy place where the priests will do their duty all the time. And that's actually mentioned later in reference to the temple itself, that the poles were seen inside, projecting into the holy place, in front of the most holy place. Now, the thing that really sets the Ark of the Covenant aside is its topper. Because just the first part that we talked about is just a box. That's what the word ark means, box. But what makes this box into the throne of God is the mercy seat. Verse 6, he made a mercy seat of pure gold. Again, it's 2.5 cubits long or wide and 1.5 cubits in its breadth. And he made 2 cherubim of gold. He made them of hammered work on the two ends of the mercy seat. 1 cherub on the one end, 1 cherub on the other end. Of one piece with the mercy seat, he made the cherubim on its two ends. And the cherubim spread out their wings above, overshadowing the mercy seat with their wings, with their faces one to another toward the mercy seat were the faces of the cherubim. Now, cherubim, as I already told you, they're real beings. They're angelic creatures. They have four faces, the face of a man, the face of a bull, the face of a lion, the face of an eagle. These cherubim are seen around the base of God's throne in the book of Ezekiel. And so here, 2 cherubim are going to be represented on each side of the seat of this throne. And their faces, and I'm guessing this, their faces are probably stylized. I'm thinking that they might even just be in silhouette because all of this is beaten out of one big piece of gold. And so it can't be like a very detailed three-dimensional representation of these cherubim in all of its reality. So it seems more than likely it's going to be some sort of stylized representation. And the two faces, and I would suggest it might be the human faces, will be facing inward toward the seat. But more importantly, are two of its wings, one pair on each of these two, will go up and over the top of the mercy seat. It's going to make effectively a canopy over the top of the throne. And if you can imagine then a person sitting upon that throne, the wings would go up and over the top of their head with significant clearance, enough clearance to not worry about. And so the Israelis will think of this as God's throne in their presence until it disappears right before the destruction of the temple in 587 BC. I've told you before that I have zero doubt as to where the Ark of the Covenant is, because in the book of Revelation, it's mentioned as being in the heavenly sanctuary of God. And I believe that it will be coming back with Jesus and serve as his millennial throne to begin with, but then his eternal throne thereafter. So I'm looking forward to seeing it in person one of these days. But the mercy seat, God says, that's where I will speak to you from, above the mercy seat and between the Kerubim. So God's voice emanates from above the Ark of the Covenant during those times that he speaks to Moses during the rest of the Exodus experience from the tabernacle, most holy place. Verse number 10 moves on to another piece that's in the tabernacle building. It's the table of God's presence. And guess what? It's made out of acacia wood, but it's covered in gold. It's a little smaller than the Ark of the Covenant. It's a little lower to the ground, and it's overlaid with gold, and it is very decorated as a food table, as a drink table. And it is going to be the place where the bread, the 12 loaves of bread are placed each week, and where the incense is placed around these loaves of bread, and where the cups of the Lord are also going to be that have drink offerings into them. We know that because of verse 16. He made the vessels of pure gold that were to be on the table, its plates and dishes for incense, and its bowls and flagons with which to pour out drink offerings. So if you think about this as God's dinner table, that is going to be right there near his throne. And I never like to pass by the opportunity to remind you that the priests will later have the instruction that the priests coming on duty and the priests going off duty will eat up the old bread that's coming off of this table, and apparently drink of the drink offerings that are coming off this table once a week. And it seems to be that it happens on the first day of the week. And boy, oh boy, folks, that sure sounds like the Lord's Supper to me. It sure sounds like communion. And so I think that there's some imagery that's intended to be put in place here. Now, on to the next thing. Verse 17. He also made the lampstand of pure gold. He made the lampstand of hammered work. Now, without reading all of this material again, the lampstand is a stylized almond tree in bloom. And so it's got its central trunk, which has a top to it where there's one blossom that's open up there at the top. That's for the central lamp. And then it has branches that come out on each side, three sets of branches for a total of six. And each of these branches terminates with another little open almond bud or almond flower where a lamp is going to be placed. And I actually think it probably originally had a pyramidal shape to it. And this is going to be the light source in the holy place. And it's made of gold, one big chunk of gold, about 75 pounds worth of gold, apparently. Which, if you're wondering, that's probably about little over two bars of gold bullion. And so it has to be very delicate because there's not a lot of gold involved in the making of this lampstand. And then the other item that is here in the tabernacle, in the holy place where the priests do their work every day, it's the altar of incense. Verse 35, he made the altar of incense of acacia wood, its length with a cubit, its breadth with a cubit, and it was 2 cubits tall. It's got horns on the corner, and it's all covered in gold. And this is the place where they are going to burn the incense twice a day during prayer time, morning, afternoon. Same time that the sacrifice is going to be burned out front on the altar of sacrifice. All of these items that we just described, all of them are going to have poles that go through rings on the sides of these items to allow them to be carried from place to place, because the tabernacle that's being designed is portable. It's going to move with Israel. Not only are Bezalel and Aholiab making these items, verse 29 says, he made the holy anointing oil also and the pure fragrant incense blended as by the perfumer. Then chapter 38, we go out front, and the first item that is re-mentioned again as being made is the altar burnt offering. We start off with a base of planks made of acacia wood forming an open square. Then, and it's 5 cubits on a side, which is pretty good sized. And then those are covered with bronze, because this is going to be outside, and this will help it be more durable. It's 3 cubits high, and it's got horns on the corners that are part of its design. Blood will be smeared on those corners from time to time. And then everything related to it's made of bronze as well. It has ring holders for poles, then it's got a grate work halfway down in it. It's like a gigantic bronze barbecue. And this is what they will burn all of the sacrifices on. And I think it was more than likely designed in such a way that the ashes would drop down below, and then they'd be able to scoop those ashes out and deal with them. And then verse number 8, it talks about the basin of bronze and its stand of bronze, which was made from the mirrors of the ministering women who ministered at the entrance of the tent of meeting. And I think this is talking about all the ladies that would come to worship on a regular basis. They were asked to donate their bronze mirrors. And that gets turned into this gigantic cauldron-like bowl. It says basin here, but I want to stop everyone from thinking of this basin as being like a bird bath sort of design. This is a gigantic water container, and it has some sort of stand that it's up on, perhaps a stand that catches water that tumbles down from it. There might even be some spigots involved in it. But this is the water source which they will use to cleanse themselves between sacrifices, because you got to get the blood off of your hands and off of your feet before you go and make another sacrifice. And so this is the cleansing station for everything that's going to go on in the tabernacle. And of course, it can be carried as well on rings and poles. Then we have him also designing and making, manufacturing the court itself, which is basically a gigantic fabric fence on four sides of the tabernacle. And then in front, on the east side of that fabric fence, we have a special screen that serves as the entrance gate. And this is really beautiful. The rest of it is very fine twined linen, hung between special poles of bronze, but the gate was particularly beautiful and wide to allow the people to come in and meet with the priests and the Levites as part of their worship. And then we finish up with this today. Verse 21, these are the records of the tabernacle of the testimony, as they were recorded at the commandment of Moses. The responsibility of the Levites under the direction of Ithamar, the son of Aaron, the priest. And Bezalel, the son of Uri, son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah, made all that he who has commanded Moses, and with him was Aholiab, the son of Ahisamach, of the tribe of Dan, an engraver and designer and embroiderer of in blue and purple and scarlet yarns and fine twisted linen. And so what we've just finished today is kind of the summary of all the work that was accomplished during the 6 months at the end of the first year of the Exodus. And eventually, it's all going to be put up together and dedicated at the very beginning of the second year of the Exodus. Mark your place. We'll get back into the Word next chance we get.